My name is Sandy Adamidis, the social media director for the Page International Screenwriting Awards, and your host for The Writer's Hangout, a podcast that celebrates the many stages of writing, from inspiration to the first draft, revising, getting a project made, and everything in between. We'll talk to the best and the brightest in the entertainment industry and create a space where you can hang out, learn from the pros, and have fun.
We've got our tea. We've got our room. Let's do a show.
Hi, I'm Sandy Adamidis.
I'm Terry Sampson.
You started to tell me a story as we were setting, as you were setting up the studio. And I stopped you because I thought maybe the writers out there, our listeners, would be interested. You seemed a little sleepy. There's a reason why.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm like a lot of people in which periodically I'll have a little trouble sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even really sure why that is. Sometimes I'm thinking it's the five coffees I had at 10 o'clock at night. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. I don't know what it is, but anyway, I found myself in that condition, so I headed to the couch where I could play a podcast mm-hmm. without waking my beautiful wife.
Was it The Writer's Hangout?
Of course.
Okay.
I can't get enough of my own voice. And so I had that on, and I did get to sleep until I heard someone crying, only like about, 15 feet where my front door is.
Oh my.
I couldn't make any sense of it because A, I just woke up, and B, this has never happened. So I went to the window, or actually I listened for a minute to see if I could get a grasp at what was going on.
Did you go
on.
To the door?
Yes.
Okay.
That was the first stop. And then I take a look out the window. I thought it was a child, but it was a woman, I'm going to say, in her 40s, possibly, who was clutching a small dog.
What time was this? Do you know?
6:30 in the morning.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So that's not unusual. People walk their dogs around here about that time. But it's unusual that they cry on our doorstep holding
yeah.
a dog. What's going on?
My first thought is maybe the dog got hit or something.
No. Somehow that part was okay. That didn't help me construct what was going on either. Then she knocked on the door. And I was thinking, you know, in this big city, they have all kinds of scams.
Yes.
But this just, mm-hmm. I said, I don't think so. But I was in my sleeping attire.
Mm-hmm.
That's not proper front porch action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's animal skins, as you know. And so I put on some clothes, and I opened the door, and she apologized and said, there's a coyote.
Oh.
So that makes sense. And she thought it was going to attack her on the porch. I know it sounds like I live in the middle of Arizona where no one else lives.
Would you like to explain to our listeners out there that
we're in
have
the suburbs.
Coyotes in
yeah.
the suburbs? Yeah.
Yeah.
We have deleted. Built way into their area.
Yeah. She said, there's a coyote. And I go, okay. That's when I went and get my baseball bat, which is near the door.
Right.
So I said, okay. I grabbed the bat and I said, did you want to try to get home? Can you think you can get home with me?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, yeah, I think so. And so off we walked and I had the bat and I'm looking around because I've seen coyotes even in the past 2 weeks where I run and I stay away from them, but they're usually small. And so I walked her from my house to hers, which was not a long walk.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, at some point she said, oh, I'm fine now. I'll just walk the rest of the way. And I said, are you sure? Because
mm-hmm.
I got a baseball bat.
Yeah.
And so she did. And I checked. And now I get to go to heaven for free. Yeah. With all the TSA extras. It's going to be great.
When you first mentioned you were hearing crying outside your door, I thought it was going to be a black-eyed kid. Which is a paranormal, these kids.
And your suggestion to me at that time would be, don't open the door.
Don't open the door. Because the black-eyed kids beg to come inside. And if you let them inside, terrible things happen.
Okay.
You know, I do see coyotes. They're not usually that big. This must have really scared this woman. Because
yeah.
I'm sure she's seen tons of coyotes
She
before.
Mentioned that. Because I said, you know, I've seen some. She goes, yeah, I've seen the small ones too.
Yeah, and their tail is tucked between their legs, and they're usually scurrying away from you.
Yes, they know nothing good is going to happen around us.
Yes, just another day in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Now, Terry, today I'm going to share another LA story with you.
Okay.
About a Netflix series that cost $55 million to make. Now, you, me, the writers out there are never going to see it. One of the reasons why I wanted to share this story with you and the writers is it's all about this television series, and you'll rarely hear me say the word writer, screenwriter, the person who wrote this.
Wow.
Here we go.
Okay.
Our story begins with Carl Rynch. He's a film director. He was born in 1977, and he grew up in the San Fernando Valley. And after directing a couple of shorts and a commercial, he was hired to direct the movie 47 Ronin in 2013. 47 Ronin stars Keanu Reeves and is about a band of samurai who set out to avenge the death and dishonor of their master at the hands of a ruthless shogun.
Wow, challenging first direction.
The film received generally negative reviews, and although critics praised the action sequences, 47 Ronin grossed less than $152 million against its total budget of $175 million.
Wow.
Making it one of Hollywood's biggest box office bombs of that year and leaving Universal, who distributed the film, deeply in red for 2013. Now, Rynch is talented. I watched his early stuff. But Terry, how do you go from directing commercials to getting to helm a $175 million budget movie? How do you do that?
You have a compromising film, a film executive?
Okay, let's go back in time. Rynch began shooting short films in his early teens. And then after attending Brown University, great school. Okay, I see, you know, he's starting to build an impressive resume.
Yeah.
He returned to Los Angeles and he joined Ridley Scott's production company, Scott Free Productions. Now, Ridley Scott, just a giant in this industry. We're talking Thelma and Louise. He directed Alien, Black Hawk Down, Blade Runner, recently The House of Gucci. Ridley Scott's just huge. Rynch's career starts to take off in 2010 when a short film he made for the Dutch electronics maker Philips won top awards at the Cannes Lions International Advertising Festival. Okay. Now I can kind of see where executives might think that he has the mettle to be able to direct a movie.
Yeah.
Okay. These executives went, he was mentored by Ridley Scott. He's got style. He's talented. Let's give this man, who has never directed a movie before, all this money. According to John Carreyroot of the New York Times, Rynch clashed with Scott Stuber, one of the producers on 47 Ronin, and at one point he had to be removed from the editing room. When the film was released on Christmas Day in 2013, it bombed. Universal had to write off a large portion of its $175 million budget.
Wow.
Rynch went back to directing commercials, and during this time, Rynch and his wife, a Uruguayan model and fashion designer, Rosas, Gabriela Rosas, began working together on a sci-fi TV series about a genius who invents a human-like species called the Organic Intelligent. The OI are deployed to global trouble spots to provide humanitarian aid. But humans eventually discover their true nature and turn against them. Rynch called the show White Horse, a reference to the first horseman of the apocalypse. I kind of like it. I think that's a really cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
I love the element of they're dispatched to go do humanitarian aid.
Sure.
I mean, that just opens up so many windows for fascinating storytelling.
Yes.
Rynch put his money where his mouth was, and he financed a shoot with his own money. To reduce costs, he hired mostly European actors, Do European actors get paid less? I didn't know that was a thing.
It's a Euro thing?
European actors and crew members and avoided Hollywood union rules. According to two production members and reported in the New York Times during a shoot in Kenya, Wrench insisted on filming for 24 straight hours.
Really?
What the heck is going on? Now, I know that James Burrows, the very, very famous television director from the 90s.
Cheers.
Yes. On when you're shooting on a set, between scenes, the cameras would go down. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Burrows, as I've heard him called so many times, who I've gotten to see direct, and I know you've gotten to see him direct millions of times, he didn't put the cameras down. He kept the cameras up to keep the energy going from scene to scene. And it worked. It really did work. But making film crew shoot for 24 hours straight is just, don't do it.
No.
Don't do it. In Romania, the lead actress caught hypothermia during a scene bare-legged in the snow and had to be rushed to a hospital. I'm really beginning to dislike this man. How about you, Terry?
That's not right.
Wrench ran out of money, and he decided to secure an investment from 30 West, which is a production company backed by this really rich guy, Dan Friedkin. Now, Wrench got his money, but started to miss deadlines, and 30 West threatened to take possession of White Horse. Guess what happens next, Terry? Do you want to guess? Just take a guess.
It goes bankrupt?
Keanu Reeves swoops in and rescues the project by investing in the show and becoming a producer.
Come on. Really?
Keanu Reeves is the nicest person in show business.
He might be.
I bet you he just said yes because Wrench asked him and just didn't want to say no.
I've seen him interviewed quite a few times, and that does seem like he might actually do that.
Yeah. Wrench, with the influx of Keanu's money, finished shooting and edited his footage into 6 short episodes ranging from 4 to 10 minutes. Are you going to tell me that he couldn't even get a solid half hour? He had to break down the episodes into 4 minutes and 10 minutes. And what is he shooting? And where's the script? There's no writer mentioned.
Oh,
He then pitches the big streamers, Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, on making White Horse into a 13-episode series using the 6 shorts as his vision.
Wow, so this was a demo.
Yes. All that money for demo that he had to borrow, his own money from 30 West and Keanu Reeves, just turns out to be a demo.
Oh, my word.
Now, luckiest man in the world, because this is 2018. And right now, it is the height of the streaming boom, where studios and video platforms are lining up to woo talent.
They got to have content.
Yep. And even though Wrench only directed one movie that was not a commercial or critical success, and there were rumors he allegedly clashed with producers and got kicked out of an editing room, Amazon hired him to produce 10 episodes of his series. No script in sight. I'm working on a show right now with a showrunner who has produced TV series for over 40 years, and he got 8 episodes.
Yeah.
Okay. At the same time, Netflix thought White Horse had the potential to become a sci-fi franchise as successful as Stranger Things, and stole the project away from Amazon by agreeing to pay $61.2 million to Wrench in several installments for the rights to the series, which they renamed Conquest.
Oh, okay.
Conquest is not a horrible name.
It's typical, though.
But it's so bland and not special to me. And I guess you could say conquest. Is it the IOs or is it the humans who win? I don't know.
Right.
Now, the deal included two unusual clauses. And I guess this is why Netflix was able to woo Rinch away. Netflix gave Rinch final cut.
Wow.
That's a privilege bestowed on very few directors. And personally, I've never worked on a television show where the director got final cut. I hear about it in film, but I haven't heard about it in TV. And there was a clause, locked for life, which meant Rinch and Gabriella would remain part of all subsequent seasons and spinoffs. So if this exploded and, you know, was the next Harry Potter,
He's in.
Netflix ignored all the same red flags as Amazon, which I just listed, including the project's past, because remember 30 West, the production company who gave the money, Rinch was still fighting with them and other early investors. I wonder if he really put any of his money in it and just told people he was. Now, Amazon did receive $14 million of the $61 million as part of the legal settlement and giving this deal. So Netflix paid off Rinch's tab, basically.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you and say the upside of this for the people that are listening right now is that there are going to be times in your life where a Netflix or an Amazon is going to turn down a script that you send.
Mm-hmm.
Just think of this,
yes.
Yeah. Exactly. They don't know what they're doing.
Shooting of the remaining episodes of Conquest got underway in Brazil, then Uruguay, and in Budapest. All right, this is killing me, Terry. He is a first-time showrunner, first-time directing for television, and they allow him to be on a project that is all overseas, international.
Crazy.
In São Paulo, the local film industry union had to send a rep to set after receiving complaints that Rinch was mistreating the team and shouting and cursing. I can only imagine how lax the shooting rules are in São Paulo compared to Los Angeles.
Yeah, they probably don't have those little safety features.
And yet, a rep still had to go to set. In Budapest, Rinch goes days without sleep and accuses his wife of plotting to have him assassinated. I have no proof of this, by the way. This is reported by two people who witnessed the outbursts on set in an article in the New York Times, and I will put this article in the show notes. Also, the reason why we have such juicy details is because Gabriella divorced Rinch, and in the court filings of the divorce, there's a plethora of these kind of details.
Wow.
Gabriella said in a filing, Rinch's behavior had started to change even before the overseas shoots. On several occasions, he had thrown things at her and twice punched holes in the wall. Rinch says he was diagnosed with autism and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and took medication for both. Gabriella said crew members worried about his use of Vyvanse, an amphetamine that is commonly described to treat ADHD. When overuse, the drug can have serious side effects, including mania, delirium, and even psychosis.
Drugs give you side effects? This is the first I'm hearing about that.
Okay, this makes sense that all his erratic behavior could be of the abuse of this drug.
Right.
Oh, but all I can think is, Terry, I'm exhausted by this man, and why does he get to continue to behave?
Well, remember that absolute power corrupts absolutely.
There you have it.
So you have that plus the drugs. So that's a duo.
Filming wrapped up in Budapest in late 2019, and back in LA, Gabriella, accompanied by Keanu, again, just the best sport in the whole world, and one of Rinch's brothers, and several members of the Conquest crew staged an intervention.
He's still being nice? Holy cow. Yes. We got to get him on the show.
Yes.
Keanu,
please come on the show. Rinch agreed to let a sober companion stay with him, but it lasted only a few days. Now, Terry, we are in March 2020. What do you think happens?
Well, I'd like to think that they put a different director in on this before it's too late. And of course, that guy shows up and there's no script. Maybe they put a script guy in there.
Well, the coronavirus pandemic is right around the corner.
Oh, yes.
And Wrench asks Netflix to send him more money.
Just for shots.
The company had already spent now $44.3 million on Conquest. Wrench had missed several production milestones, saying he was between two versions of the script, which nobody has seen, a shorter one that matched the original 13-episode plan, and the one twice as long that would have required green lighting a second season. I don't know, tell the best version of the story.
Yeah,
So they're back from shooting, and he is editing, so I can only imagine when he's saying that he's trying to match the original idea or his new idea of a new ending that guarantees a second season, and he's editing the footage to match the story.
I think you're working too hard.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's wily. I'm going to give him that. And I think what he's doing is he knows the game is played like this. They always want two seasons of whatever series Netflix is doing. They want two seasons. They sign it with the idea. Now, getting the third one, I understand, is tricky.
Oh, wait, you're right, because they do want two seasons for some kind of financial thing on their end. And then they'll promise if we get you to a third season, you'll get like a $20 million bonus. But that never happens.
It never happens.
They get rid of it.
All the production people are going to get a bump up.
Right. So everybody works really, 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 really hard to get to a third season, and Netflix cancels it.
Right.
Right. I completely forgot about that. So everybody's just working everybody in this scenario.
Yeah.
And we don't even know if he's editing the footage because he never hands over the footage. It has never been handed over.
They've never seen a frame.
Not a frame.
Holy cow.
Now, Netflix says, no, you're not getting a dime from us.
Good for Netflix.
But then Wrench whined, and whined is my adjective. I have no idea.
I hear him whine. I want to finish.
And he says the production would collapse without the cash injection.
Kaboom.
Netflix acquiesces. Wires Wrench $11 million. Bringing its total payout to over $55 million. Now, Netflix gave Wrench permission to use some of the new money to do pre-production work on the longer version of the script, with the caveat that if Netflix didn't sign off on the expanded script after 5 weeks, Wrench had to use the rest of the money to finish and deliver the original agreed upon first season.
I'm impressed by that way of dealing with it. Good for Netflix. I bet it doesn't work.
Terry, what did Wrench do? Did Wrench A, hunker down and finish Conquest, or B, transfer $10.5 million of the $11 million to his personal brokerage account at Charles Schwab and place risky bets on the stock market?
I'm going to go with B, Sandy.
He lost $5.9 million in a matter of weeks.
Well, I know. We're standing up and giving him the clap, by the way. You can't see that at home.
Boo Baker clap.
Yeah.
Now, like many people, as I mentioned earlier, it's now the pandemic's happening. Wrench was affected by the pandemic, and he started to talk about strange theories about the coronavirus. According to text messages and emails reviewed by the Times, when Gabriella went to check on him in June 2020, he took her to a scenic lookout in the Hollywood Hills and pointed out planes overhead, and he said they were organic, intelligent forces that came to say hi. He also sent her texts claiming that he could predict lightning strikes and volcano eruptions. In July 2020, Gabriella told Netflix executives about Rinch's state, and 2 days later, she filed for divorce. Some Netflix executives also received texts, and they consulted with the Los Angeles Police Department Threat Management Unit. A police department psychologist reviewed Rinch's texts and emails, concluded that he didn't seem like a threat to himself or others. I guess when you look at it, that is true. I mean, I can predict thunder. Does not mean I'm going to hurt you.
No. The volcano is one of those iffy ones.
Yeah.
You know, in case you don't like somebody near one of those.
Yes.
Yeah.
March 18, 2021, Netflix emailed Rinch to inform him that they had decided to stop funding Conquest. He was free to shop it elsewhere, but any acquirer would have to reimburse Netflix for what it had spent. Now, that is a very normal deal. Projects go into turnaround all the time, and studios want to recoup what they laid out in the first place if somebody else picks up the project.
Sure.
What a big break for this guy. He's never handed in a script. He's never handed in footage. He's got like $55 million, and they're just saying, go with God with the project. Rinch sent angry emails to Netflix, accusing them of breaching his contract and demanding another payment of $14 million.
He likes that general area
on
the extras. I'm starting to pick up on that.
He does. Netflix, they've had enough, and they accuse Rinch of squandering the funds, and then they start trying to get the money back. Rinch transferred the last of his Netflix money, which is $4 million, from his Schwab account to an account on the Kraken Exchange and bought Dogecoin, a dog-themed cryptocurrency.
Dog-themed?
Yeah, that's Elon Musk's Dogecoin. It's got a dog on the coin. That's why it's dog-themed. Yeah.
Wow.
Guess what happens next, Terry?
Dog bites?
When he liquidates his Dogecoin in May 2021, he earns a balance of nearly $27 million.
Get out of town.
He earns $27 million trading cryptocurrency.
Wow.
Wow. Is this the luckiest man in the whole world?
I don't get it.
Now, Terry, what does he do? What does Rinch do with the $27 million?
Let's see. He's already predicted earthquakes and volcanoes. I don't know what a guy that does all these things do. Go ahead.
Well, he doesn't start paying Netflix back.
No, that's not going to happen.
He buys 5 Rolls Royces, a Ferrari, a $387,000 watch, and millions of dollars worth of high-end furniture and designer clothes. The tab came to $8.7 million. Now, Rinch says the cars and furniture were props for Conquest and that Netflix paid for those. So he doesn't owe his wife any money in the divorce for that. But remember, Netflix is trying to get their money back from Rinch. And then he turns around to Netflix and says the money was contractually his and that Netflix still owes him several more payments totaling up to $14 million.
Oh, for crying out loud.
He works both sides of the Dogecoin.
That's a and I love the props thing. How in the world can his designer clothes or any specific roles
right.
be a prop?
You shot the film 2 years ago and this invoice is from 6 months ago. How did that happen? How? Netflix disagrees, of course, that they owe him $14 million. They are in arbitration and a ruling is expected soon. I guess right now, Rinch, he's in the valley somewhere polishing up that Rolls Royce.
Yeah,
I don't know.
He's the Rinch that stole Netflix.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the title of this episode.
And that's a wrap for the Writer's Hangout. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Your positive feedback will help us keep the show going so we can continue bringing you more future episodes. Remember, keep writing. The world needs your stories. The Writers' Hangout is sponsored by the Page International Screenwriting Awards, with executive producer Kristen Overn, producers Sandy Adamidis, and myself, Terry Sampson. And our music is composed by Ethan Stoller.